Chapter 38, The Grand Dragon and the Jewish Psyche. I faced increasing attacks in the Jewish press. While some news reporters endeavored to treat me fairly, I increasingly encountered Jewish media, and particularly Jewish reporters, who heaped abuse upon me. They showed no reluctance to use the dirtiest of tricks. Geraldo Rivera interviewed me at my headquarters in Metairie, Louisiana, for ABC's Good Morning America television program. He interviewed me for more than 2 hours and wore his hatred for me as blatantly as the tattooed Star of David on his wrist. For 2 hours, I took apart his arguments and defeated him on every point. Half Puerto Rican and half Jewish, he identifies far more with his Jewish side, and when the program aired, I discovered that he had edited the 2 hours to just about 2 minutes. That's okay by the constraints of TV news, but he edited those 2 minutes in a way to portray me in a totally distorted way, even putting a comment to one question on a completely different question in order to make me look dishonest. Some of his cleverly edited clips only showed parts of my sentences, completely changing my words and meanings. As the ADL and the Jewish media attack intensified, rather than retreat before the onslaught, I began to bring up the Jewish issue even more frequently on radio and television programs and in the speeches on my college speaking tours. In response, the Jewish-dominated media became even more hysterical against me. One Jewish newsletter called me the most dangerous anti-Semite in the world. They even utilized fiction as a means to discredit me, for they knew that in fiction there are absolutely no restraints on falsehood and fabrication. They could paint an emotional and even evil portrait of me, and they did so. In 1975, an all-star cast, including Richard Burton, Lee Marvin, Linda Evans, Lola Falana, and O.J. Simpson, appeared in the film called The Klansman. An extremely anti-white hate film, the storyline centers on a black man falsely accused of raping a white woman, her character played by Linda Evans. One more film about an innocent black accused of criminal acts of violence by evil white people. The real murderers and rapists, of course, happened to be whites in the film, vicious whites in the Ku Klux Klan. The film features unspeakably vile white degenerates who delight in raping an innocent and sweet young black woman. No matter that at least 100 white women are raped by blacks in real life for each black victim. In a graphic scene, three Klansmen viciously rape and beat Lola Falana. Long before his own real-life murder charges, O.J. Simpson plays a heroic young black man who does the right thing by plotting my murder. The Klan leader is portrayed in exactly the same way the media had been characterizing me. I was a young, well-spoken, intelligent, and seemingly pleasant young man who hid a heart of unspeakable evil. On a series of TV talk shows, the Jewish producers had the chutzpah to say that they had modeled the Klan leader after David Duke in Louisiana. Melvin Belli, the famous trial attorney in San Francisco, became so incensed about what he referred to as this blatant incitement to murder that he invited me to his office in California to discuss a suit against Paramount. Nothing ever came of the suit, but after some legal posturing, the producers and actors stopped mentioning my name in their talk show appearances. Some of the executive producers of the movie included Alvin Bojar, Jerry Levy, Michael Markovsky, Howard Efron, Joe Inber, Peter Rodas, Bill Schifrin, Daniel K. Sobel. The main screenwriter, Millard Kaufman, fronted for the Communist Screenwriters Guild during the McCarthy era. The message in the film was clear. Klan leaders are so evil that anybody is justified in killing them. In early 1977, an American-born Jewish reporter based in Britain came to Louisiana to do a cover story on the Klan for the prestigious Telegraph Sunday magazine. Her name was Irma Kurtz, and she wrote a novel called The Grand Dragon, based on her experience as a journalist interviewing leaders of the KKK for the Telegraph. Years later, she penned a regular feature called the Agony Column in Cosmopolitan, and she subsequently became the magazine's editor. Her novel is a vicious attack on me, but it is fascinating because it confirms everything I had learned about Jewish supremacism and Jewish extremist hypocrisy. In America's Jewish-dominated literary establishment, which writer Truman Capote once labeled the Jewish literary mafia, racial hatred is considered a white Anglo-Saxon trait. In The Grand Dragon, Kurtz not only reveals deep-seated Jewish fear and hatred of Gentiles, she ultimately justifies and advocates Jewish hatred of Gentiles. Her story is about an American Jewish woman journalist who, working in England for a British newspaper, travels back to the United States to do an assignment on the Ku Klux Klan. Once she is in the States, she visits her parents. Her father expresses his lifelong, virulent hatred of Gentiles. Considering herself cosmopolitan and fully assimilated into Gentile society, the young reporter disputes and ridicules her father's hatred. Visiting a couple of northern Klan leaders, the Jewess finds them more pathetically ignorant and impotent than dangerous. She then visits the Deep South to interview a young Klan leader who is well-educated and speaks before college audiences. He apparently does not fit the media stereotype of a Klansman. Kurtz bases the story in Natchez rather than New Orleans, although, interestingly, the book's proofreaders failed to catch an erroneous reference to New Orleans in the text. Kurtz loosely bases the story on real events, such as an interview over lunch when I first met her. Some of the lines came word for word from that first conversation with me, but only a few snippets of truth emerge from her narration from that point on. In Kurtz's novel, a Jewish heroine falls in love with the young Klansman and sexually gives herself to him. After a night of sexual bliss, she attends a Klan rally where the erudite Klansman is transformed into crass and hateful, a creature who utters every conceivable racial obscenity to the delight of his Gentile followers. After hearing his speech, the heroine feels defiled and ashamed and realizes that her father was right all along in saying that Gentiles are inherently evil. She embraces her Jewish heritage and decides to immigrate to Israel. If a Gentile had written The Grand Dragon, no major publisher would have allowed it to be printed, for only Jews have license to write in their periodicals and books that which reveals the undercurrent of hatred that Irma Kurtz and many other extremist Jews feel toward non-Jews. As is always the case with our biased media, whoever exposes Jewish intolerance is charged with intolerance. By exposing this book on numerous occasions, my reputation as an anti-Semite has even become greatly enhanced. Earlier in this book, Kurtz shows her father's hatred toward Gentiles. Quote, "And inside the goyim, every goy is a Jew killer." Another, "They're cannibals. What's their wafer and their wine that they gobble on Sundays? The flesh and blood of a Jew." Another, "Dangerous people. They hated Jews. They should all be dead. They should all be lined up against a wall and shot. They should all be..." He paused, searching for the most terrible thing he could invent. Another, "One morning my father took me to one side and asked me how I could endure being touched by a Christian. Now imagine for a moment a Gentile writer turning the passage around, and he asked me how I could endure being touched by a Jew, or inside the Jews, every Jew is a Christ killer. At first, Kurtz's heroine disagrees with her father. She just doesn't believe that Gentiles could be that bad. But by the end of the novel, she realizes that her father was right all along. The newly ethnocentric Jewish daughter states, and I quote, "At last, I understood my father's fear at coming out into the high grass of the diaspora, where tigers lay in wait for kosher meat." She continues, "Some of these people had never met a Jew or seen one, but anti-Semitism rooted inside them anyway, carried on the tip of the Gentile sperm and born in their offspring." If a Gentile novelist created a character who made similar remarks about Jews, sentiments defended in the end by the book's heroine, shrill charges of anti-Semitism would pour from the critics. Such remarks would certainly brand both character and its author as evil. Not surprisingly, the Jewish and Judeophile book reviewers saw nothing objectionable about such intolerance in The Grand Dragon. Kurtz suffered reproach from the media only on the literary quality of her work, not for her anti-Gentile hatred. In fact, she later rose to the editorship of arguably the largest feminist publication in the world, Cosmopolitan. A number of other things about both the Jewish psyche and Jewish tactics against their enemies can be gleaned from her book. Had Irma Kurtz done a nonfiction narrative of her experiences with the Klan and me, rather than writing a work of fiction, she could not have so easily twisted the facts. To justify her vile depiction of me, and to incite her readers' hatred, she invents a hideous speech for me near the end of the book, in which I call for the murder of Jews and blacks. At one point, my fictional character even compares the Jews to spiders who must be exterminated. Her message to the readers of The Grand Dragon is clear. I may sound logical and intelligent, even compassionate, so much so that even an educated Jewish woman might feel sympathy or even some agreement with my arguments, but actually I hide a heart of evil. As proof, she made up a completely bogus hate speech, an invention of her own prejudice. Many parts of the book give perceptive insight into the Jewish mindset. At the same time she ultimately embraces the idea that Gentiles are evil, blondness and the European aesthetic fascinate her, much like Philip Roth in his novel Portnoy's Complaint. She also reveals just how hostile many Jews are to our culture and values. She cites her flight over the Atlantic when she witnessed a Jewish father rip the movie headphones off his young boy's head because the child was enamored by the blonde, Gentile-looking hero of a cowboy film. Note her passages about the Klansmen she meets. This is directly from the book. Quote, "For I knew a man of that golden American blend could not be for my breed and find me in conversation with the hero of a Western movie. His blonde hair fell straight across his forehead, and he pushed it back with a gesture of impatience and vanity. Whatever his origin, Teutonic, I reckoned, or Viking, the Grand Dragon's virtuous health and ruthless good looks were then being delivered by nature only to the American born. Quote, Hitler's grandfather, some said, had been a Jew, and all Adolf's excesses were only an attempt to hide the stain on his own soul. Maybe all the prejudice was an expression of self-loathing. But the Grand Dragon turned his head toward me again, and I knew that there was no Jewish blood in him. No dark patriarch had broken his golden line. He was straight from the Norse god of mischief." In the nonfiction news profile she wrote for the Telegraph Sunday magazine, Kurtz used the same kind of language. Duke is slim, handsome, with hair, and a shade of Teutonic corn silk at mod link that pleases the university audience he frequently addresses. And the nonfiction news profile she wrote for the Sunday Telegraph magazine. Kurtz used the same kind of language. Duke is slim, handsome, with hair, and a shade of Teutonic gold. Odd link that pleases the university audiences he frequently addresses. In The Grand Dragon, Kurtz even admits that she thinks the Klansman is honest. Quote, I knew that any hypocrite could be destroyed by a revelation of the truth he was hiding, but a man who believed totally that he was telling the truth, and whose truth was dangerous, was impervious to anything but destiny or a bullet. I sensed that the Grand Dragon was such a man. But I looked at him, bristling with sincerity, brimming with it, shining with it, and I could only think again. He's dangerous. Because I knew, I had known from his first words, that I was bound to be defeated in argument with this Klansman, as he had probably defeated all his interviewers. I realized then that they did exist, the golden goys willing to die for a country that to me was a strange place. Unquote. A Jewish psychiatrist could have a field day interpreting the psyche of Mrs. Kurtz's heroine as she finds herself being attracted to the Klansman and his intellectual arguments. I gather that the purpose of the book was to condition the public, and especially the press, that no matter how convincing I might seem to be, that underneath there is a heart of evil. Ironically, while the book condemns the Klansman's efforts to preserve his own heritage, Kurtz notes the relief felt by the heroine's father's parents when they heard his new bride from the Midwest speak Yiddish. Before learning the bride was Jewish, his parents, quote, were all set to cover the mirrors in mourning for the loss of a son until the mother said a few words in Yiddish that sent her new mother-in-law into tears of relief, unquote. In an early part of the book, before she flashes back to her encounter with the Grand Dragon, the Jewess's hatred bubbles forth. I want the Grand Dragon to grow old, I thought, and I enjoy the picture of him disappointed, feeling his hold on life loosen as each arthritic finger curled back into his palm. I wanted him to grow old alone, in prison, in one locked cell, a fortress patrolled by dumb strangers, until his body was ugly and empty and lay in 6 feet of prison yard. Such a virulent hatred seems strange coming from the people who are presented as the people of tolerance and love. It is those of my persuasion who were supposed to be the ones filled with hate and with thoughts of vengeance. Imagine for a moment if I had written a novel about a young man whose parents hated Jews while he nobly refuses to accept their prejudice. Then he travels to interview a Jewish leader and learns that Jews have an inherent hatred toward Gentiles. Suppose my hero in the novel pronounces that anti-Christianism is carried in the tip of the Jewish sperm and born in their offspring. And then he finally comes to realize that his father, who has a murderous hatred for Jews, was right all along. And he goes off to immigrate to an all-white and non-Jewish country. How would such a book be viewed? There was not a peep of protest against the anti-Gentile racial hate that Kurtz spews forth in the book, and not a note of criticism of this still prominent media personality. The major criticism connected to this book is criticism of me for pointing out its hatred. As I write these words, a pertinent passage of Kurtz's book is still fresh in my mind. He's honest, I thought. And then I felt sorry for him, for honesty, in my opinion, is a vice of children and a vice my kind never had. We were old liars. The Grand Dragon by Irma Kurtz illustrates this point only too well. The next chapter is Chapter 39, Disillusionment and New Directions.